Good afternoon, and welcome to the reading of the Waterloo Cedar Falls, The Courier. It's Friday, October 8th. I'm your reader, Bob Young. We're going to have summer-like temperatures this afternoon, with highs climbing into the 80s. It will turn cloudy and breezy by Saturday. A good chance for rain moves into Iowa late Sunday night and lasts through Monday. Next week will be cooler, but the temperatures will remain above average. Another chance for showers and isolated storms will hit late Wednesday and early Thursday. Let's check out the stories on the front page today. They include Waterloo Superintendent to Retire, UNI Prof will Teach Remotely, Cedar Falls School Board Candidates Address Pandemic, and let's begin reading Griffin Patches Mostly Gone. Old Griffin Patches Nearly Gone from Waterloo Police Uniforms. Story is filed by Amy Rivers. Waterloo. The former Griffin logo is now gone for most uniforms and other clothing for the city's police force, nearly completing a city mandate to remove the logo that hampered community unity, a city councilor said. Pat Morrissey, retiring 3rd Ward councilor, told the city council on Monday that he and other council members had spent the past few weeks driving back and forth between the police station and the company switching out patches on police uniforms and clothing. Morrissey said these efforts ensured the September 30th deadline was nearly met, save for a batch of clothing that couldn't be updated because there were not enough new patches. He thanked Major Joe Leibold and the police department for their cooperation, good nature, and willingness to work with us on the matter. The clothing that had been bought back on Wednesday means that all people within the Waterloo Police Department can wear their clothing with the new patches on, Morrissey said at Monday's council meeting. Quote, and quite frankly, I think they look great. He added that as soon as the last of the new patches come in, he and the other two councilors, Sharon Juan and Jerome Amos, would drive those down and back. Morrissey didn't immediately have a timeline for that. Quote, I wanted the public to know we've been working on that, and we will get it done, he said. The Griffin logo was officially retired August 24, 2020, on a unanimous council vote. The new logo, simply featuring the words Waterloo Police, Vigilance, and Established 1868, was approved on a 5-2 vote on May 17th. But Morrissey, saying some inside the police department were dragging this out and stonewalling the retirement of the former logo, called for a hard deadline to remove the patch. Similarities between the red griffin adopted in the 1960s and a dragon adopted by the white supremacist group KKK had furthered community tension and distrust of police over the years, particularly among residents of color, according to activists. But many former officers publicly resisted the retirement of the logo police had worn for decades, and the issue led to the creation of the political action committee Cedar Valley Backs the Blue, which calls itself a, quote, pro-law enforcement PAC. Morrissey is stepping down after 2 4-year terms in office. Running for his seat are Nia Wilder, whom Morrissey, as well as the Hawkeye Area Labor Council, have endorsed, and Todd Maxson, who is endorsed by Cedar Valley Backs the Blue. Next, Waterloo School Superintendent retiring this summer after 8 years on the job. Story filed by Andrew Wind, and begins with a photograph of Superintendent Jane Lindemann. Waterloo. Jane Lindemann didn't expect to stay long when she arrived in Waterloo Community Schools almost 17 years ago. She had gotten married shortly before being named principal of Bunger Middle School in 2005. After 6 years of teaching and a decade as an administrator, Lindemann was seeking a new challenge and thought Waterloo Schools would be only a stop on her way to a job elsewhere. She did move into other positions, but never left Waterloo Schools. Quote, I didn't anticipate that I would find my place, find my passion, Lindemann said in an interview. She became a district-level administrator after a year and was appointed superintendent in 2014. At the end of her eighth year leading the district, though, she is stepping down. On Thursday, Lindemann announced she is retiring effective July 1st. This is a year earlier than the superintendent, who will be turning 55, planned to retire. "It's allowing me to find some balance between my family and my professional life," said Lindemann. Quote, "There have been some changes in my extended family," she explained. "My sister passed away in February. So I'm playing a little different role in my family, trying to support my dad," unquote. Additionally, she and her husband have two sons in district middle and high schools. The family plans to remain in Waterloo. Lindemann is Waterloo School's first female superintendent and has served longer in the role than any of her predecessors since 1983. Prior to leading the district, she spent 4 years as associate superintendent for educational services. She had also served as director of learning and results and middle school education after her year at Bunger. She notified the Board of Education of her plans to retire during its recent annual performance review. Quote, "The decision to announce now is really planned and intentional," Lindemann said, allowing the board ample time to find a successor. Board President Shan Lee McNally called the early notification, quote, "a gift for members. The process takes many months, and it isn't just a two-week process," unquote. She praised Lindemann's work during her time with Waterloo Schools. Quote, "Dr. Lindemann's ability to develop notably strong collaborative relationships with Waterloo Schools, staff, family, and the larger community has been the driving force of our success over the years," said McNally. "The board has held her to high standards during her tenure, and we are incredibly proud of her contributions to Waterloo as a community-focused, visible, and fiscally responsible leader." Under Lindemann's leadership, the district launched the Waterloo Career Center, which includes 18 programs with plans for 12 more. The center has grown its enrollment, partnership, and donor support, internships, and apprenticeship offerings. It has also expanded to serve students from 10 school systems within the Cedar Valley. Quote, "The Waterloo Career Center is one of the major reasons my family and I will stay in Waterloo," said Lindemann. "We believe so strongly in our district and in the WCC as a unique and valuable academic experience for kids that we absolutely want our children to be able to benefit from." During her time as superintendent, Waterloo Schools has enhanced advanced programs, diversified school district staff, including in administrative roles, and developed various career readiness pathways for students. Other accomplishments during her tenure include raising the district graduation rate by nearly 15% to 84.3%, and nearly closing the graduation rate gap between racial subgroups. Also, achieving the highest percentage of growth in early literacy across the state for 4 straight years, and securing more than $18 million in grants for the district, including $1 million for the Career Center and $3 million for work on the achievement gap. And finally, launching the dual language and twice exceptional signature programs and continuing to expand the International Baccalaureate program. Quote, "She has set us up, having been here 8 years," said McNally. Quote, "The district is in a great position," unquote. She noted Jane's stewardship during the last few years after the legislature made changes to limit public employee bargaining in 2017 and banned use of voluntary diversity plans this year, which resulted in an increase in open enrollment out of the district. She also highlighted multiple years of decreases in the district's property tax rate and the solid unspent balance maintained in its budgets. Quote, "I am going to work as hard as I can over the next months to make sure we are really in a really good place," said Lindemann. "Every good leader wants the next person to be even better, because that's how you honor the legacy," unquote. The board will formally initiate the search for the next superintendent of Waterloo Schools in the coming days. Quote, "We plan to be transparent, involve our stakeholders, and offer regular updates to our staff and community, said McNally. She anticipates the position of superintendent will be posted in late November. The next story is an update filed by Andrew Wind. COVID-19 brings out some differences in Cedar Falls school board candidates at a forum. Cedar Falls. COVID-19 helped highlight some differences between Board of Education candidates during a Wednesday night forum. The virtual event, hosted by the Black Hawk Bremer League of Women Voters, included a question for the five participating candidates on how Cedar Falls Community Schools should address the pandemic. Six people, including two incumbents, are running for three at-large seats on the board in November 2nd election. One candidate, R.J. Meyer, was not available to participate in the forum. Quote, "This is an enemy and adversary that we all must fight together," T.W. Ingram, the 28-year-old finance manager at Bill Caldwell Ford, said of COVID-19, calling it the biggest crucial problem the district faces. "I believe that starts with mandating vaccines for all our staff and students." In addition, he said those not yet able to get a vaccine or who can't adequately socially distance should wear masks. "Until those steps are taken," Ingram said, quote, "we will not be able to deal with other concerns from staff retention to students' academic gaps." The district is not requiring vaccinations and currently mandates masks at individual elementary schools based on the county's rate of spread for the virus and the percentage of people absent in a particular week. Brenda Feit, 52, a software consultant, took issue with that approach. She noted that the board was hamstrung in its response to the pandemic this fall by a new state law until a judge put a temporary restraining order in place that stopped its enforcement. "Since then," quote, "I'm deeply concerned with the path that has been taken by our district," said Fitt. "It doesn't allow the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention and the American Academy of Pediatrics recommendations of masking for all people in kindergarten through 12th grade schools." Quote, "There needs to be some thoughtful response about what's in the best interest of students, including those who are not yet eligible to get a vaccine." Quote, "Preventing the spread of the disease must be our priority," she said. Quote, "I do wish we could not be stuck in this place," said current board member Jeff Orvis, a 61-year-old Waverly Shell Rock High School teacher and instructional coach. "I understand the position the administration is in." He applauded the district's willingness to look at the data and provide some flexibility in mask use. However, he added, "I would have supported a stronger mask mandate." Orvis noted he uses one every day in school, "so I believe very strongly that we should be wearing masks." Alan Heisterkamp, the other incumbent board member, pointed out the unpredictability of the pandemic. Quote, "It has required us to be certainly patient and grateful," said the 59-year-old director of the University of Northern Iowa Center for Violence Prevention. Quote, "Those in leadership have made some tough choices," unquote. Heisterkamp said he does tend to agree with other candidates that masks make a huge difference in preventing spread of the disease. Lowell Stutzman, 35, a product development engineer at John Deere, acknowledged that board policies give the administration decision-making power on the use of masks. Still, he pointed to where the data on COVID-19 cases are at now. Quote, "The current case count for Black Hawk County has peaked and has been showing a downward trend for about 2 weeks," he said, calling the 3% absentee rate to require masks in certain situations pretty conservative. In addition, he noted that the eligibility of those under 12 for vaccines is getting closer. Quote, "As far as what I would support as a board member is that moving forward, I think that we should strive to get back to normal," said Stutzman. "I would support the parents' choice to mask and vaccinate." Candidates weighed in on other topics that have stirred controversy as well. No one voiced support for a new state law that makes tax credits more generous for donations to school tuition organizations, which provide scholarships so students can attend the parochial schools they benefit. While there are other ways taxpayers support private schools, most candidates said no public funding should go to them. They didn't favor a bill that would have outlawed use of the 1619 Project curricula or a new law banning teaching and mandatory training on so-called divisive concepts related to sexism, racism, equality, or inclusion. Various candidates said they don't believe concepts like critical race theory are being taught in the schools and that students need to learn accurate history, unquote. None of the candidates said they favored the 2017 changes that limited Iowa school employees' rights to bargain for a contract. For some responding to a question on the topic, that was about supporting unions. Others talked about their support for teachers. While Ingram identified COVID-19 as the most crucial program facing the district, other candidates brought up different sets of concerns. Stutzman pointed to a related topic, the achievement gap, that have emerged between students and been disruptive to their education over the past 1.5 years since the pandemic began. He hailed the district's renewed commitment to collaborative grade-level groups of teachers called professional learning communities as a way to attack the problem. Orvis and Fitt both discussed problems with school staffing. Fitt called it a workplace shortage as young teachers move on to other jobs and those later in their careers retire earlier, some because of the pandemic. Quote, what we can do as board is to be the advocate, she said, for district staff members. Quote, we do need to have high quality staff in our buildings, and it's becoming harder and harder to attract good people, said Orvis. Quote, the work that's been involved in this job in the past few years has been quite taxing, unquote. He suggested that it could take broader measures like a supplemental state aid increase of 4%, and tuition grants for future teachers going through college to maintain that staff quality. Heisterkamp noted matters of diversity and inclusion, focusing on efforts during the past year of the District Equity Committee he serves on. Committee members became better listeners, he said, as they heard the concerns of Black and other non-white current and former students. More input was gathered through surveys, and an equity resources section was put together on the district's website. Heisterkamp said efforts to hear the needs of minority students and respond have continued with the help of district staff. The forum video can be viewed at the League of Women Voters of Black Hawk Bremer Facebook page. Andrew Wind filed this next story. Plan announced to allow University of Northern Iowa professor to teach class, and it begins with an aerial photograph of the UNI campus, highlighting the bell tower. Cedar Falls. A University of Northern Iowa biology professor, removed from a class due to his mask requirement, will return to teaching those students from a distance. Professor Steve O'Kane Jr. said he worked with his department chairperson and dean to return to the plant systematics classroom virtually. He is getting help from a colleague for the in-person aspects of the lab-heavy course. Quote, basically, what I plan to do is to meet over Zoom for an extended period on Tuesdays, he said in an interview, for the lecture portion of the class. Students will then gather for a shortened lab period on Thursdays, where the colleague with expertise in plant anatomy and diversity will guide them through the materials that I have left out. A UNI spokesman released a statement announcing the change. Quote, after listening to the concerns and working closely with all parties involved, the University of Northern Iowa has reached an agreement with a faculty member to continue teaching his course, the statement said. Quote, Board of Regents and university policy has not changed, and masks will not be mandated in the class. Biology professor Steve O'Kane will instead teach his plant systematics course and lab online. Another high-qualified professor will handle other classroom duties, unquote. The Board of Regents in May lifted indoor mask requirements on campuses of Iowa's public universities. Quote, UNI continues to support the rights of all of our faculty, staff, and students, and is pleased to have reached a resolution that protects all of those involved, the statement said. O'Kane was removed from the in-person class last week for imposing a mask mandate and threatening to lower grades for violators to mitigate the potential for exposure to COVID-19. He had also introduced a resolution to the UNI Faculty Senate, which would have endorsed actions of individual professors to protect the health of those in their classrooms, like requiring masks, even if not allowed by state law or regents' guidance. It was not approved. Quote, "The people that this impacts the strongest are my students," O'Kane said, explaining why he was willing to teach under the new arrangement. Quote, "They're the ones that aren't getting what they signed up for. It just isn't fair," unquote. Still, he said, "I think the proper word here is it's acceptable when it comes to the hybrid approach of continuing the class." Quote, "That's not me. I'm the kind of guy. I'm going to give these students the very best that I'm capable of," unquote. Since being removed from the class, O'Kane said he has received support from many UNI colleagues and hundreds of faculty from across the nation. "This situation is striking a nerve throughout the country," he said. Without requiring masks for indoor settings, he emphasized that UNI is falling short of safeguarding the health and safety of everybody at the university. Quote, "They are doing everything they can while still obeying the policy put forth by the Board of Regents," he said. O'Kane believes the regents are not allowing mask requirements to mollify Governor Kim Reynolds and Republicans who hold majorities in both chambers of the legislature, since there's no state law forbidding mandates at the universities. "The Board of Regents should not be playing with people's lives," unquote. Josh Lehman, Senior Communications Director for the Regents, said in a statement that the board's guiding principle this fall has been to give students a return to as much of a traditional educational experience and student-led activities as possible. He added, "The board in our public universities have been very clear that we support COVID-19 vaccines and will continue to strongly encourage all our faculty, staff, and students to receive it. They are widely available, including on our campuses, and we will continue to stress the importance of being fully vaccinated. We want as many people to get vaccinated as soon as possible, as vaccines are by far the best protection against COVID." Lehman noted that regents strongly encourage people to wear a mask or other face covering while on campus. Turning the page now, we are in the Cedar Valley section, and we'll begin reading "Elevator company fired after leaving jail in a lurch." Amy Rivers filed this story with the subheading, "Blackhawk County terminates contract after elevator company leaves jail in a lurch," and it opens with a photograph of the external facade of the Blackhawk County Jail. Waterloo. The county is terminating its longtime contract with an elevator company, citing issues with timely maintenance, particularly at the jail. The contract between Blackhawk County and TK Elevator specifies that the elevator company be on site within a two-hour notice, said Rory Gieving, county maintenance superintendent. That didn't happen in June, when TK Elevator failed to respond when both elevators were out of service at the Blackhawk County Jail. "The elevators serve as a lifeline for travel throughout that building," Gieving told the Board of Supervisors on Tuesday. Quote, "The company actually left the jail in a pretty tough situation with both elevators out overnight. They didn't have anybody there to address the situation," he said. Sheriff Tony Thompson said the jail's elevators are critical. Support services like meals, laundry, and medical supplies are delivered from the first floor to the two upper levels of inmate housing on giant wheeled carts, a system that relies heavily on elevators working at all times. "We had problems upon problems. In fact, I've got one elevator down right now," Thompson said Thursday. The county formally put TK on notice that after the incident, but has had several other downtimes since, Gieving noted. "Consequently, we're really questioning the confidence level that we have with this company to keep us up and going," he said. O'Keefe Elevator, a family-led Omaha-based company, has acquired in 2019 by German conglomerate ThyssenKrupp, which then sold its entire elevator division in 2020 to private equity firms for $20.4 billion. That company became TK Elevator, now the world's fourth largest elevator business. Thompson said that's when the problem started. Quote, since that merger, things have just gone downhill, he said. We're seeing the brunt of that. There's just not the timeliness. Giving said the county has noticed that as well. Quote, I'm just requesting that we formally give our 60-day notice to them, Giving said. The board agreed on a unanimous vote without discussion. Giving said his department was ready immediately to rebid the elevator service contract and would begin that process. Bands march into Waterloo. Two high school marching events planned Saturday in the Cedar Valley. Story filed by Andrew Wind, and begins with a photograph of the brass section of a band practicing on a football field. Waterloo. Cedar Valley residents have ample opportunity to see high school marching bands performing Saturday. The State Marching Band Festival will take place at Waterloo Memorial Stadium starting just after 9 a.m. The event, hosted every other year by West High School, features 17 high school bands from across eastern Iowa. Beginning at 11 a.m., Bands of America will hold its Iowa Regional Championship with 13 high school marching bands from four states at the Unidome on the University of Northern Iowa's campus in Cedar Falls. Judges will assess the bands at both events, but each has a different purpose. At Bands of America, schools will perform their shows during the preliminary competition. Five Iowa bands will be joined by four from Nebraska and two each from Missouri and Illinois. That is followed by finals starting at 6 p.m. Two bands at the contest, Independence and Cedar Rapids Prairie High Schools, will start their day at the state festival. Quote, this one is not a competition against other bands, said Jason Dobbs, West High School band co-director of the state festival. We're not competing against other groups or other individuals. You're competing against a standard scale, unquote. Bands earn divisional ratings of 1 to 5, with 1 being superior. While West and East high schools compete in marching contests every fall, Dobbs said, quote, there's some schools that just do this and don't do other competitions. Among those is Cedar Falls High School, which has otherwise performed at home football game halftime shows at the Unidome. The 132-member band is performing a Beatles-themed show this year. Quote, we're just hoping to do a great show, said band co-director Gerald Ramsey. Students have been working all week, quote, to go through and clean everything in the drill after getting the final pieces roughly on the field a week ago. After a lot of effort, it is very gratifying to see that they're having success with this now. Performing at the outdoor Memorial Stadium will be a change of pace for the band. Quote, we're always performing in the air-conditioned comfort of the Unidome, said Ramsey. While it's really nice to have a flat floor to walk on, it's very annoying to have the echo of the enclosed building. Quote, when it comes to playing music, it's nice to be outside, he said. It's the only time that the audience will hear the natural sound of the band that we hear during rehearsal, unquote. He acknowledged, quote, yeah, we're hoping to have a Division I. The focus is on doing the show really well, and if we do that, then the rating comes, unquote. Admission to the state festival is $7 for adults, $5 for senior citizens, $3 for students, and free for preschool and younger. Memorial Stadium is at 1350 Katoski Drive. For Bands of America, there are adult, student, and senior citizen preliminary finals and day passes. Costs range from $22 to $37, with children 10 or under are free. Find the event schedule and purchase tickets online at marching.musicforall.org/event/Iowa21. The Unidome is located at 2501 Hudson Road, Cedar Falls. You are listening to the reading of the Waterloo Cedar Falls, The Courier, for Friday, October 8th, on IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind. Now let's turn to today's obituaries. Independence. Bonnie L. Close, 59, of Independence, Iowa, died on Monday, October 4th, 2021, at Unity Point Allen Memorial Hospital in Waterloo, Iowa. Bonnie was born on February 4th, 1962, the daughter of Charles W. and Dixie L., maiden name Cook, King. She attended the Cavalry Evangelistic Center School and graduated in 1980. Later that same year, she married Jerry Wildeboer, and they made their home in Independence. Together, they had two children. They were later divorced. She worked for several years at convenience stores throughout Independence before becoming an administrative assistant at Goodwill Industries in Waterloo, Iowa. She also went on to study to be an office specialist at Hawkeye Community College. She graduated in 1995. In June of 1993, she married Ben Close in Independence, Iowa. A visitation will be held on Friday, October 8th, from 5 o'clock p.m. until 8 o'clock p.m. at the Rife Family Center Funeral Home and Crematory in Independence, Iowa. A funeral service will be held at 10:30 a.m. on Saturday, October 9th, at the Rife Family Center. Burial will be held at Mount Hope Cemetery in Independence, Iowa. To leave an online condolence, please go to www.rifefamilycenter.com under Obituaries. Waterloo. Roy George Cope was born July 22, 1970, to George and Sandra, maiden name Sailor, Cope, in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. The family moved to Waterloo, Iowa in 1972. Roy graduated from Hudson High School in 1989. He graduated from the University of Northern Iowa in 1994 with a Bachelor of Arts degree in History and, in 1998, with a Master of Arts degree in History. Roy married Deborah Reinsche in 1998. Roy was employed at Hawkeye Community College in Waterloo, Iowa from 1999 to 2010 as an instructor of history classes. He was also employed at Quest Communications during this time. Roy earned a doctorate in philosophy degree in modern European history with specializations in Nazi-era Germany from the University of Nebraska-Lincoln in 2010. Roy began a visiting assistant professor position in January 2011 at the University of Nebraska-Kearney in Kearney, Nebraska, and remained there until 2018. Roy began a tenure-track position teaching history at Eastern New Mexico University in Portales, New Mexico, in August 2018, and was employed there until his death. Roy died on September 26, 2021, at his home. Services will be 10:30 a.m. Monday, October 11, 2021, at Dahl Van Hoof Schoof Funeral Home in Cedar Falls. Visitation will be from 2 o'clock to 5 o'clock p.m. Sunday and 1 hour prior to service time on Monday at the funeral home. Memorials may be directed to the family. Online condolences may be left at www.dahlfuneralhome.com. Waterloo. Gwendolyn Gwen Cherry was born on August 25, 1951 in Waterloo, Iowa, to Laverne Stewart Cherry and Lee Ezra Cherry, Jr. She died in Robbinsdale, Minnesota on October 2, 2021. Gwen professed her love for Christ at an early age and was baptized at Payne AME Church in Waterloo. A 1969 graduate of Waterloo East High, she worked at John Deere Engine Works for 30 years, retiring in 2007. Memorials may be directed to the family at 2247 East 4th Street, where they will be receiving friends. Services are 11 a.m. Saturday, October 9th, at Payne Memorial AME Church, with burial in the Garden of Memories Cemetery. Friends may call at Sanders Funeral Service from 5 to 7 p.m. Friday and 1 hour before service time on Saturday at the church. Sanders Funeral Service is assisting the family. Waterloo. Phyllis Marie Runner, 90, of Gilman, formerly of Waterloo, passed away on Wednesday, October 6, 2021, at the Willows of Marshalltown, under the care of Iowa River Hospice, after a short illness. Services for Phyllis will take place on Sunday, October 10th, at 1 o'clock p.m., at the Mitchell Family Funeral Home in Marshalltown, followed by burial at Graceland Cemetery in Laurel. Friends and family are also invited to a visitation 1 hour prior to the service, beginning at 12 o'clock p.m. Memorials in Phyllis's honor may be directed to Iowa River Hospice, Laurel United Methodist Church, or the Salvation Army. For questions or condolences, please visit www.mitchellfh.com or call the funeral home at area code 641-844-1234. Wellsburg, Roberta G. Aukus, 77, of Wellsburg, Iowa, passed away on the evening of Tuesday, October 5, 2021, at the Grand Gervante in Ackley, Iowa, surrounded by her loving family. Funeral services for Roberta will be held at 10:30 a.m. on Saturday, October 9, 2021, at the Pleasant Valley United Methodist Church, located at 16360 150th Street, Wellsburg, Iowa, 50680. Pastor Dot Gersima will be officiating the service for Roberta. Public visitation will be held 1 hour prior to the services. Following the funeral, Roberta will be laid to rest at the Pleasant Valley United Methodist Church Cemetery. Memorial contributions may be directed in Roberta's name to her family, which will be later designated elsewhere at a later date. For further information or to leave a condolence, please visit www.ablesfuneralhomes.com. Doyen Abel's Funeral Chapel is caring for Roberta and her family. Roberta Gertrude Rinken was born on December 24, 1943, in Applington, Iowa, the daughter of Robert and Gertrude, maiden-name Kluster, Rinken. She was raised and educated in the Grundy County School District and graduated from Wellsburg High School with the class of 1962. On June 19, 1964, she was united in marriage to the love of her life, Harold Aukus, in Applington, Iowa. From this union, the couple were blessed with 3 children, Bradley, Brent, and Anita. Roberta was a hard-working woman who took pride in all she did. She dedicated most of her working years as a homemaker and raising her 3 children. Roberta enjoyed working as a secretary at the Wellsburg School early in her marriage. She had a passion for life, loving and sharing laughter with everyone she met. The sound of laughter gave Roberta great joy in her life. She also loved cooking, baking, doing crafts, gardening, taking a yearly fall trip to the Prairie du Chien, and looking at all the colors of the trees. She would keep telling the children, "Oh, look at this one. Oh, wait, this one is pretty." Her children find themselves making the same comments about the leaves to their own kids. Her most important joy in her life was her family, especially her grandchildren and great-grandchildren. She loved them more than words can describe, and was extremely proud to be their grandmother. And now let's continue reading more local news. Cedar Falls. One person is dead following a motorcycle crash in Cedar Falls Wednesday night. Authorities were called to the stretch of Iowa Highway 58 northbound between the Mayor's Pedestrian Bridge and the Green Hill Road intersection at around 7:40 p.m. They found a 2012 Harley-Davidson motorcycle and its driver, Mark Krull, 51, of Hampton, deceased at the scene, according to Cedar Falls Police. Details of the crash weren't available, and anyone with information is asked to call Cedar Falls Public Safety at area code 319-273-8612. Union endorses Democrat Mathis. This story filed by Lee Gazette Des Moines Bureau. The campaign for Liz Mathis, a Democratic candidate in Eastern Iowa's 1st Congressional District, was endorsed by Local 125 Plumbers and Pipe Fitters, which says it represents thousands of skilled trade workers across 25 counties. Mathis, a state legislator and former journalist from the Cedar Rapids area, is running to face first-term Republican incumbent U.S. Representative Ashley Hinson. Quote, Liz Mathis has been a longtime ally of organized labor and has proven she'll always put the interests of hardworking Iowans first, local 125 plumbers and pipe fitters business manager Mike Sadler II said in a news release from the Mathis campaign. Man pleads to lesser charge in shooting. Story filed by Jeff Reinitz. Waterloo. A Waterloo man who had been accused of shooting a man in 2013 has pleaded to a lesser charge. In the plea, Willie Douglas Guyton, Jr., 51, pleaded to throwing a punch instead of firing lead. Quote, I admit on or about June 23, 2013, in Black Hawk County, Iowa, I threw a punch at Carlos Calhoun while at the Knights of Pythias with the intent to cause him a serious injury, Guyton wrote in a plea filed earlier this year. On September 14th, he was sentenced to 100 days in jail with credit for time served. Calhoun has been injured in the wrist, head, and shoulder by bullet fragments when someone opened fire on a friend's home at 426 Ricker Street in June 2013. Officials said the punching happened during an earlier incident that led up to the shooting. Guyton remained at large until February 2019 when a police officer stopped him at a convenience store. He was initially arrested for intimidation with a weapon, willful injury, and other felony charges. But by 2021, prosecutors weren't able to locate Calhoun to testify at the trial, according to court records. As part of an agreement with prosecutors, Guyton entered a written plea to a reduced charge of assault with intent to commit serious injury, an aggravated misdemeanor. Waterloo man arrested for robbing three children, filed by Jeff Reinitz. Waterloo. A Waterloo man has been arrested for allegedly robbing three children on their way home Tuesday afternoon. Waterloo police arrested Marcus Angelo Gardner, Jr., 39, of 236 Boston Avenue, for first-degree robbery and intimidation with a weapon. Bond was set at $50,000. Authorities said two 12-year-olds and a 13-year-old were walking home from school in the 300 block of Lester Street when Gardner threatened them with a gun. He allegedly pointed the weapon at one student's head, and another began filming the incident with his phone. Gardner allegedly demanded $50 and took the phone, police said. No injuries were reported, police said. Woman fires gun to scare off a dog, filed by Jeff Reinitz. Cedar Falls. Authorities are investigating a Wednesday incident in which a woman fired a handgun to scare off a dog that was attacking her dog. The incident happened around 6:30 p.m. on Western Avenue when the woman was walking her dog, according to Cedar Falls police. Another person was also taking their dog for a walk in that location, and that dog attacked the woman's dog, police said. The woman pulled out a handgun she was carrying and fired shots into the air in an attempt to scare off the attacking dog, police said. That tactic didn't work, and the owners were eventually able to get their pets separated. No injuries were reported. The owner of the attacking dog was cited by animal control, and the gunfire matter was referred to the Black Hawk County Attorney's Office to determine if any charges are warranted. Let's turn back to the Cedar Valley section to pick up one story that we didn't get read yet. Filmmaker Carson Morrissey tells story of street performer in Roulette Girl, followed by Melody Parker. And it begins with a photograph of two people looking at the river, and the caption says, Orion Risk as Levi and Allie Jo Williams as Greta in a scene from Roulette Girl, a movie about a young street performer spinning through life, art, love, and even death. Waterloo. Local audiences will easily recognize movie locations in Carson T. Morrissey's new film Roulette Girl, shot in downtown Waterloo. The Cedar River, 4th Street Bridge, and Newton's Cafe serve as quintessential Midwestern backdrops. The City M Productions film premieres Saturday at Peterson Town Hall at the Waterloo Center for the Arts, 225 Commercial Street. Doors open at 6 p.m., and the show begins at 7 p.m. Admission is free. It is for mature audiences. A talkback is planned after the screening. Morrissey filmed some scenes at the WCA. Quote, I liked finding some of Waterloo's iconic images. I love to go on walks around the city, and I set my film in my favorite spots, the places that inspire me. I wanted to treat Waterloo the way New York is treated in movies, almost like a character in the story, said the award-winning filmmaker. Quote, Waterloo looks gorgeous at night with the lights twinkling. Here in Iowa, we have smaller cities, so we love going to the big cities. We tend to miss the magic in our own backyard, unquote. His latest film tells the story of Greta, Allie Jo Williams, a young street performer who is struggling to find her place in the world of art, love, and even death. The movie's tagline is, quote, spin till the world stops turning, because passersby can spin her homemade roulette wheel and land on the scene she'll act out, then drop a coin or two into her bucket. In a bad breakup, her boyfriend accuses her of panhandling and doesn't think her art amounts to anything. Quote, anyone who has tried to make it as an artist has heard something like that, Morrissey said. I like the idea of using that to determine what she does, and she's spinning through a rough life and dealing with drama. It has darker connotations too, he explained. Other cast members include Kate Robertson Pryor, Orion Risk, Andrea Morris, Joe Frenna, and Dakota Fontes. Morrissey wrote the script, quote, originally, I planned on it being improvisational, but I enjoy script writing, so I started with a vague outline and wrote stage directions and then added dialogue, letting it fall wherever I felt lines naturally fit. In my story, Greta is walking through her daily life, and it has a cool kind of conversational feel. He was inspired by the works of Greta Gerwig and the mumblecore genre, a low-budget independent film style from the 1990s that used naturalistic acting, improv, and dialogue. Roulette Girl is the filmmaker's first drama. His work usually focuses on short and long-form horror flicks and thrillers. In the last decade, he has written, directed, filmed, and edited more than a dozen films, including Dark Thought and What If and Dawn, fan film adaptations of the video games Life is Strange and Life is Stranger Before the Storm. A Cedar Falls native, Morrissey fell in love with movie making in grade school, filling binders with ideas, stories, and scripts. He made his first movie in the sixth grade. Now the filmmaker has won numerous Iowa Motion Picture Association awards, including the Award of Excellence. He currently chairs the IMPA Awards Show Committee. His day job is as Director of Programming and Outreach at the Grout Museum District. He also attends Upper Iowa University. Morrissey said he's particularly excited by the look of Roulette Girl. For the last 12 years, he used a handheld DSLR Canon camera, but his new Blackmagic Pocket Forte, quote, is meant to make movies. It gives you the look, texture, framing, and composition you expect to see in movies. I shoot handheld because I like the pseudo-documentary feel in stories like this, Morrissey explained. Following the premiere, Morrissey hopes to have additional showings and plans to enter the movie in Midwestern film festivals. Quote, eventually, I will put it online, but I'm not planning on that for at least a year. There's something so much more special about sitting down in a room with friends and watching a movie. Quote, I'm going to try to keep that magic going for as long as I can, he added. Wave of Light event planned in Cedar Falls on October 15th. No Foot Too Small plans Wave of Light event October 15th. Cedar Falls. No Foot Too Small will host a Wave of Life event from 6:30 to 8 o'clock p.m. October 15th at Island Park Beach House. The free event is taking place on International Pregnancy and Infant Loss Awareness Day, sponsored by Viridian Credit Union. And this story begins with a photograph with the caption, Haley Admire, her husband Caleb, and their daughter McKenna, old baby Matthew, who survived 33 hours in 2019, Harley became an angel ambassador for the No Foot Too Small organization. No Foot Too Small's mission is to support families experiencing or have experienced pregnancy and or infant loss. The organization was founded in 2014 by Robin Bodro of Iowa City after Bodro and her husband Ryan lost their child, Bo. NFTS offers bereaved parents an environment to choose joy and to connect with other families who understand. People in each time zone will light a candle at 7 p.m. and hold it for 1 hour to create a wave of light around the world. At the Cedar Falls event, each family member will receive an LED candle to hold. Names of angel babies will be read aloud. Haley Admire and Katie Stedman, both of Cedar Falls, are angel ambassadors for the organization. For more information about No Foot Too Small, go to www.nofoottoosmall.org. Let's turn to the sports page now. Under the heading Prep Cross Country, record finishes. Fast course leads to fast times at MVC Supermeet, filed by Jim Nelson. Waterloo. The weather was quite dreary, but not a single runner seemed to mind. Despite a steady drizzle of rain, it was fast from start to finish in both the girls' and boys' varsity races Thursday at the Mississippi Valley Conference Supermeet at the Irv Warren Golf Course. Both individual winners set new course records as personal best fell left and right. Iowa City Liberty's Ashlyn Kennedy pulled away from the pack of three runners to win the girls' race in 18 minutes, 17.3 seconds, while Alexander McCain of Iowa City West maintained a strong lead throughout the boys' varsity race, crushing the course record by 28 seconds with a winning time of 15 minutes, 14.8. "It was a fun course," said Keeney, last year's individual runner-up. "It was nice to run on a good surface." "They went out really fast," exclaimed Cedar Falls boys coach Scott Gall. "It probably cooked the goose for all of them except for the guy that won. At the same time, they are getting to the last part of the season where that stuff is going to happen," unquote. Dubuque Hampstead won the girls' team title, while Iowa City High took home the boys' championship. Cedar Falls was third in the boys' race. Keeney, along with Dubuque Hampstead's Julia Guile and Kaylee Lightson, pulled away early in the mini-pack, and it stayed that way through 2 kilometers before Kenny surged to the front and led much of the final kilometer. Quote, "I'm really good friends with them," Keeney said, of Gall and Lightson. "It is nice to have people you are friends that you are running with. Of course, you are thinking, it's a competitor I have to stay with. But you also are thinking, these are my friends. Run with my friends." Quote, "They are great girls, great competition," unquote. The top girls finisher from the Metro, Zoe Zylstra, in 20th. Zylstra was 0.7 seconds faster than teammate Rachel Mant, who came in 21st. In the boys' race, McCain appeared to finish as strong as he started in his 15-second victory over Ford Washburn of Iowa City High. Quote, "I don't know about that," McCain laughed. "It sure was exciting to come up the hill and be in front of the pack. A pretty exciting day." Quote, "This is the best conference in Iowa, and it is so fun to race against these guys. On a course like this, 3 laps, it is a lot different than normal cross-country course, but it was fast," unquote. Cedar Falls was led by Braden Burnett and Luke Hartman, who both finished in the top 10. Burnett was 6th in 15 minutes, 46.8, and Hartman was 9th in 16 minutes, 8.4. Gall was pleased with his team. Quote, "The guys are looking better and better," Gall said. "We are starting to pack up a little bit closer and figuring out the guys on our team we are with so we can help each other. So that is fun to watch." Braden has quietly had one of the best seasons of anyone in Cedar Falls history. "I think that was the 5th meet he has been under 16, unquote. In NFL football, Smith joins Packers one day after Cowboys drop him, filed by the Associated Press, and it begins with a photograph of linebacker Jaylon Smith, Green Bay, Wisconsin. Jaylon Smith has joined the Green Bay Packers one day after the Dallas Cowboys released the veteran linebacker. The Packers officially announced Thursday afternoon that they had signed Smith. Packers coach Matt LaFleur had talked earlier in the day about how the former Cowboy would fit in with the Packers. Quote, "I just think he's a veteran guy who's played at a really high level and just can bring kind of a mentality and leadership to our defense," LaFleur said. Quote, "Certainly he's going to be behind quite a bit, being the fact we're heading to week 5 and it's a totally different system. So there's going to be a lot of work that needs to be put in, not only from him, but from our coaching staff, to get him up to speed. But we'll let him kind of come in here and compete to play." LaFleur added that it's highly unlikely that Smith would play for the Packers 3-1 as soon as Sunday's game in Cincinnati, and they're 3-1 also. The Cowboys released Smith at the same time they anticipated getting linebacker Kenyu Neal back after the converted safety missed 2 games because of a positive COVID-19 test. And that does it for today's reading of the Waterloo Cedar Falls, The Courier, for Friday, October 8th. I'm your reader, Bob Young. You can access a recording of today's reading on our website, iowaradioreading.org, at any time. And thank you for listening to Your Iris, Iowa's first and only radio reading service.